This is High Above Grand. We're in the Kill Switch Studios with producer R.W. Smith, and my name is Brett Lars Underwood. I'm a writer, I'm a poet, and I've done some radio before, I've done some journalism, and we're here today to interview Jesse Eichmann. He's a writer who's part of Back of the Class Press in St. Louis, and that's right here on Grand. Let's talk more and more about these things, writing and all things. Hello, Jesse. How do you do today?
I do very well. Thank you.
That's what I've heard.
You're not wrong.
Yeah. So, most excited to talk to you about Back of the Class Press, and you got a new book coming out.
It's true. I have the proof in my hand.
Yes. First, a crisis. Should we talk about that first?
Yeah, let's talk about first a crisis. Like, first, I want to say that really it should be first three crises, because part of the joke for why it's titled this is because it took me so long to get this book out. I kept telling people, oh, I'll get it out very soon. I would have a major life crisis, and it would sort of put it back another couple of years. Rinse and repeat. So now here we are in 2024, when I had wanted to put a book out probably 4 years ago, you know?
All right, yeah.
So I explain in the opening notes to my book that there are three overarching, like, major fuck-ups that sort of delayed this, and that is actually sort of the organizing principle of the book, though they're not necessarily told in order. So I had a big mental health relapse a while back, 2017.
All right.
And then I had a epic breakup / makeup / breakup again, with my current partner. Yeah. So figure that one out. I guess that's why you need to read the book. And then the other one was sort of coming to terms with who I was as a person, which took me a really long time. It turns out that you can't just bury dysphoric feelings by hitting it over and over with a shovel and hoping it goes away.
I've tried that.
Not how that works.
That's how I broke my arm, trying to hit myself with a shovel.
You said it was you losing a fight with a concrete pillar.
Well, that's true, too. But
yeah,
we'll just go with that.
Yeah.
So the writing, though, that's what we're here for. I know the book, the title is, and we all start writing out of, like, I'm freaking out.
Yeah, no, I definitely start writing out of I'm freaking out or I'm angry about this. I have a lot of very angry person poems in here.
All right, cool. I like that. I don't know what I'm saying. I'm just babbling at this point, but you know how it is.
Yes.
You didn't deny it, so I don't know.
I did not.
It's not all babbling, is it?
No, I promise there's a point to this somewhere.
Okay. Yeah, I'm being silly because this is a podcast, and who's listening anyway? There'll be a lot of people listening, but you came from North County, and then you went to UMSL, and then that's kind of how that all started. You know, we all start writing earlier, but then people say, you have to do this, you have to do that. But you actually did some editing and were part of the university situation. It's all good, right?
Yeah. I was part of the University of Missouri St. Louis writing scene for about 6 years.
There you go. Yeah.
I got a lot of things published in their on-campus journals. I edited for their newspaper. They actually care about creative writing there because it's a small enough campus where they don't just, like, immediately push journalism down your throat when you say that you're a writer.
Yeah. Again, we're High Above Grand with Jesse Eichmann. My name's Brett Lars Underwood, and we're talking about writing. So we have a common person. Well, we have probably more than a common, but Matthew Scott Freeman, the Dogtown poet. He's not known that as anymore, but I mean, pretty impressive and personable guy.
Yes.
Is that a person you met early on?
It's not a person I met while he's not a person I met while I was in school. Basically what happened is I was in undergrad creative writing classes, and one of the teachers was like, "Hey, have you heard of Matthew Freeman? Your work reminds me of Matthew's." And so I got a sample of his writing, and then later I showed up to an alumni event where they were doing a picnic in the park in Tower Grove. And he was there. Like, "I have heard a lot about you, but you have no idea who I am." So we just, yeah, started from there.
So since you've known him for a while, how do you think your works relate or not?
They relate in the sense that he tells these very zany kind of, he's a storyteller also. And he talks about his time through the mental health system as well as I do. I have a couple of poems in here about that.
Sure.
So that was probably the thread that Glenn Irwin was trying to follow.
Glenn Irwin, okay.
Yes.
Maybe this would be a good time for you to read a couple of poems that you have in mind about, and then maybe we can talk about.
Sure. Yeah, sure. Although they're not related to what we were just talking about.
Well, you know, that's how it goes.
Okay. So I do have two poems that I would like to read. They are toward the back of the book.
Okay, and the book is called First a Crisis. Coming out soon on Back of the Class Press.
Right. Coming out March 24th.
That's right. Jesse Eichmann's going to read some poems.
Okay, so this poem is a poem about how I came to understand my identity as a trans man. I used Don Quixote as an avatar for it.
Yeah.
And so this poem is called Don Quixote.
Mm-hmm.
Don Quixote tried and failed again to fashion a princess out of the swirling pastel petals in his brain. His Dulcinea gave her excuse on the phone, left him to his inane rage, tore off his love and labor like cheap bangles or out-of-fashion earrings as she ran. And as he sits here, feeling dull, bent, and dirty like an overused hoe, he feverishly feeds off the memories of that illusory summer. He'd carried garbage bags of her clothes from her mother's flooded manhole of a house to her apartment. He'd attacked the loose blanket stuffing on her floor as if it were an actual giant with her caught in its grimy fist. He'd scrubbed out her cabinets and drawers and made sure every single spoon, brownie pan, and stupid can of black-eyed peas was exactly where she wanted it. But neither of the roles was quite right. She kissed him with too much teeth and seemed scared to touch him, and he still seethed at his reflection. And when she stroked his shoulders and called him sir in bed, it thrilled him, but it felt like they were actors in a chivalry play. Now that it's over, now that sovereign lady slips back into slobbered-on lady, she returns to her piles of dirty clothes she won't wash, and he returns to the problem of himself. And what bothers him the most isn't necessarily the string between his legs or the daily ritual of reopening the scars on his breasts. It's that, in the book, the joke's on Don Quixote, right? How dare he pine? How dare he try to elevate a wench? How dare he believe in anything when everyone around him just chants a rosary and stares at scriptures they can't read anyway? How dare he be anyone other than Alfonso Quijano, a pissant farmer with a skinny horse and way too many books? Don Quixote will take this loss. He will crawl home from the bar where his buddies told him that it was better she leave him now so he won't be deceiving himself longer. But instead of burning his library, instead of telling him to stay single in their vendetta against transformation, he wishes one other person would acknowledge who he's been trying to be forever. So maybe the night of the rueful figure can be less rueful for once.
Very nice. We're going to hear another?
Yes.
All right.
So this is the ending poem, and I sort of have an obsession with the ideas of lust, especially queer lust, and so I wrote a poem based on some lines of the non-binary poet Sam Sachs, based on the ending lines of one of their poems, and it's called Sparing Her My Body.
All right.
I have decided I must. One brush from my knuckles is hot tar and will leave blisters. She won't see them. They'll burst under her epidermis. But I look at my hands and worry that if they get one touch, they won't ask permission to cover her. My body is part of a history, of a theft. The tactile crash of flesh on flesh. The hot pad of a palm. Pressure on the neck. Legs snaking around the waist. Nails stealing slivers of someone else's skin. Does heaven dispense with history? And I implicate my eyes. They get full on empty things. The gaps in her teeth. The tiny lines on her head where no hair grows. And that space she keeps covering every time her shirt threatens to rest higher up her torso. She must beware my softest stares. The ones that try to reconstruct the vacuums of her and everything deeper than what she will show me. I don't know how I will appear up there. If I'll be all fire and eyes or something pseudo-human, a vision with wings, but fire and feathers can still oppress. And ending on Earth an even greater terror, my body as ash would coat her fingers and choke the grass she walks on. I pray that heaven is a radio and every voice in it teaches me to unlearn the body. Make me an angel that cannot see her, cannot touch her, that hums under static, and hopes one day she'll hear and forgive me.
Oh, thanks very much. That's amazing, yeah. So can you expect, like, is the book a lot like some of your newer stuff, or most of your newer stuff, or does it include some of your older stuff, or is this completely like tell us about the book. Why are you so excited about the book?
It covers about a 10-year period for me in terms of poetry. And some of it was from my chapbook that went out of print a while back.
Okay.
So I needed to get that stuff back in print.
Oh, yeah.
Some of it, especially the work that's in the back, is newer stuff. The stuff that deals especially with gender identity, that kind of stuff, because I was not dealing with that before,
sure.
Or I was dealing with that in a more oblique way. The poems that directly address that are newer poems.
Sure, yeah. That's great. And so that's coming out this spring, hopefully. Yeah.
Yes.
On Back of the Class Press. What's that been like? You're the, what is
I'm
your?
I'm the head copy editor.
Head copy editor. You're not like co-founder or something. I couldn't remember.
No. Yeah.
All right.
So I basically work with the writers one-on-one on their manuscripts. I do direct proofreading and revisionary stuff.
Sure. Yeah. We need to get Dan right in here to talk more about the press. Of course, we had him in already and we just didn't get around to talking about the book.
Right.
I did want to talk to you about, you recently went to New York City and read at the big festival.
The New York City Indie Poetry Festival.
Yeah, yeah. How was that? I saw some great excitement about you, just people we know on Facebook.
Yeah, so we went to New York and then New Jersey. We did a little four-stop tour. It was great to be able to read at the festival. Dan had me read first for the press readers, and he loved that because I was so loud that some of the people from the other tables, the other stages, sort of wandered over to our stage and sat down. It's like, yes, I got them. And now we will keep their attention. Yeah. It was good for me because I'm not used to traveling a lot.
Yeah, okay.
For the service of my art.
Sure.
You know, I work at a grocery store, so it's hard to scrape together money to do these elaborate tours. And I felt a little out of my depth at first with the New York subway system. It's very much a caterwauling toaster oven, just like, you know, layers upon layers of it. Because it's nothing like the scale of St. Louis. Absolutely nothing.
No, New York's wild.
It's very wild. But I loved it,
yeah.
And I wouldn't, you know, take that experience back for anything. It did teach me the value of touring and making new connections in other places.
Yeah, right on. Yeah, I heard good things. I'm jealous. I'm gonna go somewhere soon too.
Yes.
Hey, so how do you? So you didn't grow up on the South Side, but now you're on Grand, part of a book press on Grand, and you do some readings around Grand. And how do you think things? How did things change for you, perspective wise, from growing up in North County, being up there around Umsol?
So I grew up in West County.
You grew up in
actually.
How come I keep wanting to put you out there?
I'm not sure, but I grew up in West County, went to school in North County.
Oh, there you go. Okay, well, yes. Cool. So how do you? Tell us a little bit about your experience just coming from there and now being
in the city.
Sure. Yeah.
So
there, as it relates to poetry, of course.
Yeah, I definitely end up hustling a lot more on open mics than I would otherwise have the opportunity to, because there's not a lot going on out in the county. You tend to feel kind of isolated out there, and I would have to make it an occasion to take the bus all the way out there to go out for a reading. I quite like being able to just throw on some clothes and walk 20 minutes.
Yeah.
To an open mic. And there have been a lot of them pop up in the last few years that are poetry specific. And I really like that. It's a poetry listening room. And when it's not like you bring poems to an open mic that's primarily music and people just look at you strange. So.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We've had some good times at Spine. I like that one. And then at the Heavy Anchor, they do a monthly poetry reading.
Yes. Or
an open mic kind of thing, too, with a featured reader sometimes. Yeah, it's good.
I've been the featured reader 3 times.
You have,
And I've hosted shows now, too, which is a completely different experience than what I had before.
Sure.
Yeah. I've been told I'm pretty good at it.
I've heard that you are. I don't trust my own judgment, so. But I see things on Facebook, and I'm like, that person really knows what's going on.
Yeah.
And now you're leaving us.
Well, I mean, I'm moving to Ashland, Wisconsin.
Oh, okay.
It's true. But it's not like I'll never be back.
Oh, I know. It'll be fine, I'm sure. But
yeah, I will have interests. I will have reasons to come back and visit.
Is this a literary endeavor or just a kind of a work, personal kind of thing?
It is a personal endeavor.
Okay.
So I'm moving with my partner who already lives up there.
And okay,
bought
yeah.
a house.
Okay. Well, oh, having a house in Wisconsin is very important.
Yes.
Unless you're going to write poetry in a yurt. That's crazy right there. That's good stuff.
That's
but,
too hardcore for me.
Well, you know, maybe you'll get there.
Yeah, I don't we're paying a lot on this mortgage, so we might use the house. But yeah, I mean, we got 3-bed, 2-bath for $135 because
that's
the part of Wisconsin that no one lives.
Oh.
It's like way far north.
You could be the mayor.
She has ambitions to be the mayor. Funny you should mention that.
Oh, okay. Well, you know.
Yeah.
Press secretary.
Mr. Mayor.
I like that.
Yeah.
What else are we talking about? I don't know. There's a lot of things going on in St. Louis. You've been here for a while. That Dan Wright guy, he's something, but we don't have to talk about him right now. He'll be back.
Yeah, I've only been working with him for like 7 years. We don't have to talk about it.
Oh, 7 years. Yeah, that's just a drop in the bucket.
Yeah, it's a long collaborative, you know, history, though.
He's an interesting guy, yeah. What were the other things you were writing before? You know, I know it took me a long time to get a book out, but we do chat books and stuff like that. So what were your kind of like themes of interest as a younger person?
So I've been obsessed with very similar themes of interest for a long time. In fact, the second poem that I read was what my thesis advisor called my big fish poem, because it's like you reeled in a big fish, now do something with it. You know, weave all your obsessions together and about the body politic and queer identities and all this other stuff. So I've sort of been going in that vein for a while, except now it took a more masculine turn. Now it took a more honest turn, because it took me a long time to come around to, oh, this is who I actually identify as. Because I would write these poems in my graduate MFA workshop that ask people to call me sir, like very loudly, and grappled with expectations of like, I don't feel like I conform to this woman stuff very well. And people would ask me, hey, what's going on with that? And I would just be like, la, 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 shut up, nothing. but the answer is not nothing. And it took me 3 different partners of mine saying, hey, maybe you should investigate this. I don't really think you're living as how you actually see yourself. And it took, you know, about 6 years of me being shut up, not listening, before I finally figured that out or came to terms with it.
Yeah, that's got to be something. Because when you're writing, a lot of times it's because you have to, sort of, and you're like writing from your immediate response and somebody else is telling you how to do something else. That's the only problem I had with academia, but that's got to be a help sometimes. Maybe, I don't know. You tell me, like, did you draw any influence from maybe other writers who are going through similar situations, or you know what I'm saying?
I didn't necessarily take it from other writers, but I was around a lot of other queer people because I led the LGBTQ group on campus for a time.
I was
their president, and so I saw a lot of people come and go who were dealing with these issues, and these were people in my community, my other circle. Sometimes there's overlap, sometimes there's not, but it is interesting that the way I came to it was through trying to write a breakup poem and realizing, there's a lot of things that I'm not dealing with here. And that first poem that I read was sort of my gateway into understanding, I know what I need to do with all of this information now.
Oh, yes. Well, I enjoy reading with you and hearing you read. What is it about the St. Louis scene that you're going to miss, and what impressed you most when you first moved here and doing different readings and meeting different poets?
Yeah, I miss a lot of people. Matt Freeman in particular was really sad when I told him I was leaving. He was like, but why? Like, you have everything going on here right now.
Yeah.
I guess one of the things that impresses me is that this is a very working class town. So you get a lot of working class type poetry. It doesn't sound like it came from NYU, which is good because I wouldn't fit in a crowd like that. I don't write the kind of content that would very seamlessly flow together. And I sort of straddle the worlds, I think, in a way that Matt actually does.
Sure. Where
I do indie stuff, but I came from an academic background. And I like that they're also very performance-oriented here. They care a lot about what sounds good to the listener. And how you sell a poem to a crowd. And I'm glad that I was given the opportunity to hang out in those circles where they do prioritize that, because I quite like being a performance poet as opposed to just a poet on a page. I consider that part of my identity now.
There's a big difference between somebody that stepped out of a classroom and doesn't know what a microphone is and might be in a place where there's a little bit of noise here and there and nobody can hear them.
Right.
I didn't go to college to learn how to write poetry and stuff like that, but I do tend to be more of a performance person too. And I think that a lot of the readings that we share together or that we've been to at the same time seem to be that way.
Yes.
And I don't know what I think about it. I mean, I guess if you think your words stand out on the page that way, that's good. But if we can't hear them.
Right.
Let's talk about this.
Yeah, poetry was an oral art.
Yeah.
And I think it's important that we don't lose that.
I think that's very, if you're making people sit for 20 or 30 minutes listening to you, you should at least be able to hear.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Hi, my name is Brett Lars Underwood, and you are here for High Above Grand, a podcast located in the Kill Switch Media Studios with your producer, R.W. Smith. I'm Brett Lars Underwood. I'm a poet. I was a journalist. I did radio on KDHX late night, and I booked a lot of bands. I know a lot of people, and so should you. So join me here for High Above Grand. We'll listen to conversations with important and lovely, influential, creative people along South Grand Boulevard, like these Pat Sajak assassin folks who are doing a track right now called Saint Wayne. All right, we're back on High Above Grand. The background music here is Pat Sajak Assassins from their album called Motherboard. My name's Brett Lars Underwood, and we are High Above Grand in the Kill Switch Studios with producer R.W. Smith and author Jesse Eichmann. We've been talking to Jesse Eichmann for a while here, and we're going to get back into it in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Oh, man.
Yes.
Technical.
Yeah.
We were talking about reading in New York and what it's like to be coming from West County to North County to UMSL, being in an academic situation. we're not really in the academic situation when we're doing open mics down at the Anchor or on at Spine or I mean in the Dunaway Books has a title of the new press is called Back of the Class Press.
Right. We say that all the best ideas come from the back of the class.
It could be true.
It could be.
Just don't get back in that coat room. I don't know what that means.
Yeah, don't get back in the coat room. But yeah, our logo is this little unimpressed kid sitting at a desk. And I think a lot of the people that I associate with on this press have had sort of disillusioning experiences with academia.
Uh-huh.
And I have also had that, but maybe to a lesser extent than they have. They tend to think it's very insular. It's very gatekeeping. And we try to not do that here.
Yeah, I did the academia thing for a while, but I didn't study writing. I'm a reformed journalist, sort of. But how do you think you came from there to getting out? How do you see yourself benefiting from having gone to college and all that stuff, and not graduating? Or you were in the MFA?
I've got a master's degree.
You have a master's degree. Oh, yeah. See what I think. What do I know?
Yeah. So I think the most important thing that I'll keep with me is sort of when you do an academic program, they advise you how to more rigorously edit your stuff, how to be more disciplined in your writing mm-hmm. practice. And I think that's more really what I wanted to take with me. The elitism I can leave,
yep.
Of course. And the student debt I left, thank goodness.
Oh.
That took a minute to pay off.
Yeah, those do. Wow. Well, good for you, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it took me a long time, and all kinds of beneficial things happened along the way. But yeah, getting the debt out of the way makes you less angry about having gone through it.
I was definitely told that this is not the kind of degree that you wanted to go into a lot of debt to get, and especially not when I graduated, because I graduated in December 2019 and then everything shut down for 2 entire years.
Oh, there you go.
So
yeah,
the opportunities weren't there, but the time was there to spend a lot of time writing, so that when people invited me out in 2022 after things sort of died down or got to a dull roar, so to speak, I was living right by the venue where we were reading all the time since I had moved. So it was fortunate. I was able to sort of be dragged out of semi-retirement.
There you go. We're talking to author Jesse Eichmann, who's coming out with a new book called First a Crisis on Back of the Class Press. In the Kill Switch Studios, here we are. My name is Brett Underwood. We're talking about writing and this and that. How do you think that, I've always had to pay the bills, obviously, but to have the time to write, and what was the book called? A Room of One's Own, is that, I'm forgetting the
Virginia
name.
Virginia Woolf.
Thank you very much. Yeah, that's very important, right? I mean, so certain people have to work all the time, and I've purposely not had a family and all this good stuff. So,
right.
To find the time or to make the time, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So it had been a challenge because I ended up stuck on buses for so long every day because my job is in South City. So I would spend an hour and a half on the bus, 2 buses and a train to get out from West County to where I'm working. But now that I don't have to have that time spent, that actually adds up quite a bit. It gives you time to write. It gives you time to edit. It gives you time to pursue any other goofy hobbies that you want to do. And I have the kind of job where it's almost sort of automatic at this point. It's sort of autopilot. And so I can end up just thinking about other things because I work overnight and I don't have to encounter a lot of people, doesn't drain my social battery, so it leaves me available to think about what this latest project is that I'm writing myself or editing for someone else or that's something that I feel very fortunate to have. And even though those jobs don't pay well, I do like the kind of jobs where you can leave the job at the job site.
Sure.
That's very important to me because I struggle with boundaries otherwise.
Right. Yeah.
And so if I were going pursuing more academia, I would have no free time, it almost seems like.
Yeah.
All of my time would be devoted to planning classes, grading papers, you know, all that kind of stuff that takes me very far away from the actual work.
Yeah. You find yourself writing like right after you get off work if you're working overnight? Do you like go home and like...
No. So a lot of times what I'll end up doing is I'll unwind for a little while, maybe an hour or so. And I'm very much a morning person. I do some of my best thinking in the morning, which is odd for me as an overnight worker. So basically that's my evening.
Yeah.
And I do have actually like poems in here that address like what it's like to, you know, try and fuse writing and working at a supermarket, trying to fuse writing and working overnight, because I wasn't used to working overnight when they forced me to do that in 2020, and that messed up my concept of everything.
Yeah.
I thought to myself, what is breakfast? What is that? Because I found myself sitting down to eat breakfast at 8 p.m. Like that, it was a mind fuck that took some time to get used to.
Yeah. Yeah, do you find your writing changing since that? Since you had that?
I definitely have.
Yeah.
Although in ways that it would probably take, you know, someone else who's not me, someone who could step outside of my head to maybe explain a little more.
Yeah, it's hard to step away. Like, yeah. It's hard for me to write about stuff that I've, like, recent work experiences. I have to wait for a long time to figure out.
Correct.
Oh, that was weird. But or it was great.
Yes.
Yeah, so... Yeah, it's been great talking to you, Jesse, and I maybe we'll have you back and then we'll talk more when you get back into town, or maybe later this month even, if we're just really that hard up for... I'm kidding.
You should be kidding. There's plenty of writers around.
There's plenty of writers around. We're gonna have all kinds of different people playing and up here in the studio, but yeah, well, we're looking forward to First of Crisis on Back the Class Press. Jesse Eichmann has been the guest. We're high above ground in the studios of Kill Switch. Kill Switch Studios, in other words, with producer R.W. Smith. We'll outro with Pat Sajak Assassins again. Thanks again, Jesse.
Yeah, thank you.
All right.